think what I understood, and this may be changed, most of your funding was going to go to cities over 10,000 people.
How about that?
Surprise, surprise. Cities over, with 10,000 people or more. Surprise, surprise, right? So in terms of the options, I really like option two in strengthening whatever we can in terms of if we can limit, you know, 7, 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. or, you know, whatever those limitations are. I'm not necessarily in favor of the option number three because we don't have the volunteer base, the staff, and support that kind of an operation, or we would be doing it right now. Because we have spaces where we could house people. My church, Foursquare Church, several churches have indicated an interest, but we can't get the volunteers to staff a program. And offering those programs takes a lot of volunteers.
And a lot of money even.
And exactly. So I like option two. Yes.
Steve, a quick question.
Sure.
Up on Grave Street, you know, you got that great big church building up there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that a conceivable place?
You mean the Assembly Church that's on? It's
yeah,
on
that
Darryl.
Great big
metal building.
Yeah, the great big huge thing.
Yeah,
it's been sitting empty for years.
Oh no, it's no. being used.
Oh,
now.
It is.
Oh yeah, it's being used every week. The Assembly Church put that up a number of years ago, and they finished it, and they are using it every week. So no, that
no.
really. Yes, it could be a great place for overnight accommodations. However, getting the volunteers for those kind of shelters is a constant challenge, and the offering the programs that it takes, they're struggling to do that in Roseburg. I don't know how we would do it here in Winston. So that's my piece.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else like to speak? Here we go.
429 Pentown.
Your name?
Josie Braslin.
Josie, okay, thank you.
Well, we came from Crescent City before we moved here. And Crescent City had a huge homeless problem. Now, they offered showers and, you know, meals and things. And that kind of was a draw for the city is what I noted. And I talked to a lot of the homeless. I mean, I feel bad for them because a lot of people, you know, lose their jobs. Rents go up, they can't afford. And we also knew a lot of people that were homeless, a lot of seniors that are homeless, living in their cars. But we also saw that people would trash. It was terrible. The trash was everywhere. Then you had a lot of vandalism. You had good people, you had bad people. You had all kinds of people. So I don't know what the answer is because I don't see it ending or stopping or slowing down.
Sadly, I agree.
Yeah.
We all agree.
Yes.
What we got to decide, though, is of those three options, which one are we going to proceed
well,
with
Well, you don't
first?
Want to do nothing. I mean, you know, just let it be because that will be a disaster for sure. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate you speaking. Anybody else like to talk? Here we go. Good for you.
Hello, I'm Constance Hammonds, and I live at 734 Southeast Briar Court. I would like to suggest, if you are entertaining option number three at all, that you might look into this particular program that I heard about. It's in Austin, Texas. It's called Mobile Loaves and Fishes. It is a Christian organization. You can find out about it at MLF. That stands for Mobile Loaves and Fishes, .org. Don't put .com, that's something else. Wrestling or something. It's a wonderful program, and as the last speaker said, we might have trouble with volunteers. But it's such a great program, I believe, that I just highly suggest that you look into it before you decide completely against option number three. And I have a phone number here for a woman named Sarah Bushman. Her phone number in Austin, Texas, and she lives in this community, is 1-512-551-5555. 5541. As was mentioned earlier, there are several reasons that people become homeless. Sometimes it's alcohol, drugs, trouble with the law, mental illness, but sometimes it's just a sudden loss of a job or the loss of a spouse or something like that. They're just some of them are just regular people just like us, and they suddenly find themselves in a situation that's untenable, and all they have left is their car, perhaps, to live in. And so I believe that it's our Christian duty to do what we can.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Anyone else? Fire away.
Hi, Terry Fink, 1100 Abraham Avenue. I just had a couple questions. I would prefer option two, if we can work on getting something together. I was wondering if there's any way that Winston can do like an online survey, like they did with the What's Up, What's Next in March. I guess they had, you guys had a survey online.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's something that would be possible. We might get more of a community, maybe more of community involvement. I'm not 100% sure on that. But my other comment was at the last city council meeting or the one before that, the right-of-way contract was discussed with all I can think of is CenturyLink. And that's not right. The internet people.
Right, but that was not necessarily a right-of-way contract. That was a franchise agreement for
user
right-of-way.
That's for user right-of-way. That's it. And I was just wondering if that would be impacted by an option two, or definitely probably with not doing anything, but I didn't see any of the right-of-ways on the map.
Yeah.
So I was just a question.
Yeah, just to speak to that just for a second. Right-of-ways and sidewalks are the big concern as far as sleeping or camping overnight goes, and all of our right-of-ways come with significant safety considerations. You've got traffic either driving close to them. I'm sorry. I can't figure out how to shut this off.
You throw it over here, I can shut it off.
Andy will take it for you.
Anyway, so in option two, we can designate areas that might work, you know, potential areas that might work. But our, you know, the recommendation would be for us to not do that, to not designate areas, but to designate how much time they can spend, and specifically outline those where there are considerable safety considerations, like at any of our pumping stations, any of those types of things. So what we're left with is our large public parking areas, like around City Hall, around the community center, our parks. Those are really the areas that we're talking about, writing, you know, regulation in for, you know, what a camping site looks like, what they can use and can't use in there, how long they can be there, that type of thing. So for the right of way.
Remember to mute your phone before entering the meeting.
I turned it off.
I have a question about that, because I think that's a legitimate approach. Two questions, really.
Steve, could you approach the glass, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
I have two questions. First, can we designate areas that are off limits completely,
yeah,
like the pump stations?
Yeah. So just to speak to that, so we can flesh it fully out. A lot of the sample ordinances that are being passed by cities around the state, and even cities comparable to our size, some of the common themes that we're seeing is you can put a full prohibition on areas that you can argue safety. So sidewalks and rights of way. You could get, I mean, there's a safety issue there. So the other thing is a lot of these, and I have a sample one we can bring up at the request of council, there's a group of addresses that has a full prohibition, and some of the common areas are like the local police department, that property, the local public works department, the city hall. It essentially just filters, in most cases, filters them into the city park area, how many other parks that you have.
The second question then is, who's going to enforce this time? For example, if you say by 7 a.m. you have to be done at 7, and I mean, I read the documents that were provided, very helpful, by the way, thank mm-hmm. you. At 7:01, then do we have enough police presence to start?
We don't. I mean, we do yeah. and we don't.
Yeah, that's.
But the police would be the ones that would be charged with enforcing it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure they're thrilled.
Andy, if I remember correctly, isn't there something about they can't be in a floodplain?
How to live in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For camping.
Temporary housing.
Right. They'd want to be out there before winter. That's for sure.
No, I'm talking about something about, it seemed like I read something about a floodplain, that you can't put a camp in a floodplain.
Are you kind of talking about down here along?
That's part of the park.
Yeah, that'd be an area we would kind of want to shy away from.
I guess it's one of those things, too, that's weather dependent, it's seasonal dependent. I mean, if you're in the middle of summer, floodplain usage wouldn't be an issue, but if you're in winter time, that'd be a different scenario.
As you might suspect, the legislation in terms of the language doesn't want to go near things like that, and future case law will help further clarify, but the word is objectively reasonable. So anytime you can make an argument for the safety or overlay component, then you can craft an ordinance behind that is supposed to be justified in that regard.
Objectively reasonable. You have another comment you'd like to make?
As much as I agree with the fact that option number three, I believe it states something about we have to provide opportunities for employment and other things, you know, that we may feel would be too much for us to do. Sounds like option number two has a whole lot of extra things we have to do too, like kick them out at 7 a.m. Option number three would actually get them out from underfoot if you put them over in a specific spot.
Keep a few, there lies the main issue of this whole concept of a place to put them. Yeah, then we have to provide jobs. We have to find the place first. And we don't have a plethora of property here that we can assign to a camp and then provide the bathroom services. I don't. Those are very, very expensive things to do.
I realize I don't understand many of those things.
No, it's not that you don't, but you need to have the opportunity to have that presented to you, because it's horribly expensive to do this, even just number two with the police having to move these people along. And if they choose not to go, then we have an issue with, now we've criminalized their spot. We have to leave their possessions in that spot for 72 hours. And after that, we have to store them someplace for 30 days, giving them the opportunity to come back. And you can't just pitch that stuff in the back of a dump truck, drive it down to Public Works, and dump it in Andy's lap, because he's going to have a fit.
Again, you're pointing out the fact that option number two does have a lot of problems as well.
They all do.
Right.
None of them are the perfect option.
I just wanted to say one more thing about option number three. Not that I'm completely for it. That's just the one that I'm looking into right now.
Okay.
There are programs out there already that we could utilize to, you know, for finding a job, for finding permanent housing eventually, for clothes and job hunting, whatever they need, food.
But it still takes people and volunteers, and that's where
I firmly believe that if we have a program like this and we get the community excited about it and you get the people to watch these videos that I've been watching, that we will have more volunteers than we expect. The churches and the civically minded people,
come
forth.
I think what we need to look at, and we must come up with something in black and white by the end of June. We have to have something that we can legally manage this with. Ideally, what we're talking about here is not a City of Winston resolution to this issue. It's a regional problem.
Yes.
And a regional solution is really, I think, what we'd all like to do.
If we could work together.
Get it regionally, like in Roseburg or Sutherland.
It being the county seat.
Right. But, you know, yes. I think regionally, that's what we have to do.
So why can't we reach out to Roseburg and talk to them about a partnership?
Because it's a funding issue, and there's already a group formed working on that. Isn't that what you guys are doing,
Alan? Could you put me in touch with them?
Talk to Alan.
Alan, I'd like to talk to you after
there,
the meeting.
There is, a first Thursday group that meets, providing an opportunity for all service organizations in Roseburg to set up a table. The Dream Center has access to some of those services. So there are several organizations in Roseburg that are doing that, and they would be glad to help us. Again, the problem is transportation. How do we get them from here to there? And ADAP does have bus passes that they can use. Wayne over at ADAP does that. He has a shower trailer that he takes to locations every day of the week. That with a washing machine, and so the services are there. Between now and June, I don't think we're going to get it solved.
No, I agree.
And
with
so
you.
I think long term we should look into meal. What was it? The meals and
mobile loaves and fishes.
We can look into what they're doing in Roseburg. It's just going to, but having to have that, we can't stand that up by July 1st. So we need an ordinance by July 1st, and then maybe we can move forward in a longer-term plan.
Okay, very good. Mark, did you have something you wanted to
add? Yeah,
Thank you, Steve.
Kind of put some context around costs. We went through a project with the Oregon State Mayors Association and looking at what it would cost for us to put together a facility here, and assuming that we don't use our parks, which are very limited, we'd have to go out and buy a piece of property, we'd have to build a facility on it, and this is not talking about any of the people involved. The, you know, just having the facility and all of the things that are necessary or required in order to have this would be around $4 million. So that was our ask to the state legislature from a capital standpoint. So, I mean, without that help, without somebody providing that money, that infusion of money, and we're not talking about just Winston, we're talking about every city in the state that has to deal with this, which is one of the major problems, is that this is a one-size-fits-all regulation. Instead of, as the mayor was talking about, looking at regional solutions where you look at a whole county trying to find one facility to, you know, rather than every city have a duplicate type of scenario.
Exactly.
So it's very expensive, and without even talking about people and, you know, going from there. So right now, all we're trying to do is just decide on what's the best way to limit our exposure, but allow for people that are in crisis to have a place to lay down and sleep if they have to. So
talk about the funding side of it. That OMA plan was to seek $40 per resident per city, and that was going to be their annual give from the state to solve the problem. Well, you can do the math and figure 6,000 people, $40, not going to go very far. Sir.
My name is Jim Luce, 377 Pintail. A couple nights ago, I looked on the internet and I was seeing this piece that they did on Japan. And Japan, of all the industrialized countries, has one of the lowest homeless rates. And they were showing why that is, and it's a lot of it's cultural. They're willing to put up with a very small area. I showed some of the rooms where these people stayed in, and they were not very big. And so And they're very cheap to live in. Whereas in our country, we have to have a whole apartment where we're not happy. And I was talking with a homeless person, Donald was here a couple weeks ago. He had a job, but he couldn't afford $1,500 for an apartment anywhere. And I'm just wondering, is there any kind of a thing in the city for our zoning or whatever it is that would allow rooming houses or something that's quite a bit down from the $1,500 a month? Is that something that the zoning or whatever prohibits? Is it something that could be available if some businessman wants to?
We have the opportunity in our codes for multifamily housing units.
Mm-hmm. We do, yeah.
The key to that is you got to find someone to build it.
Yeah,
there's no prohibition on any elements like that. The zoning is fairly straightforward. It allows for single, medium, or multifamily.
I think though the question is more along the lines: could a individual rent a room out to someone for $500 a month or whatever, where you're not dealing with the same family? You know, you've got multiple families living in one residence. Yes. Mm-hmm. We do have that in our code.
Okay. Thomas, we do have, don't we
Thank
have
you.
in our zoning something like the tiny houses? They're not allowed right now, are they?
That's correct.
That's correct. So tiny houses, which maybe you're thinking about too, our zoning does not allow that.
But, you know, even if it did, we'd have to find a place to put them.
Yes.
And that's one of the things that, for example, in Sutherland, what their concept is, you start in a tent, and you grow to a bigger tent, and then you grow to a what's called a pallet house, which is made out of pallets, literally, and then to a bigger structure. And that, you know, it's kind of that evolution. And along with that, you're provided job training and all these other things. If you have a problem, you start all over again. Is kind of the deterrent to it. So, but all of these things are new, and they're all fraught with problems, as you might imagine, because they've never been done before. So there's a lot of communities out there trying to flesh some of this stuff out.
Thank you, Mark. If there's no other comments from the audience.
Let me just add in one piece, because as churches have been talking about this issue for the last five or six years, and we've considered a variety of options. One is creating some pallet houses or buying some tiny homes, as Constance suggested, that don't have running water, they just have power. So you can have an air conditioning unit or a heater, depending on the season. The problem we keep running into is funding, because it's difficult to raise the funding. The second part of those tiny homes, and I know from some back channels that Sutherland's having this issue already, is maintenance. Even a tent has to be maintained. Even a pallet house has to be maintained. Even a tiny home has to be maintained. And some of you remember, what's it been, 8-9 years ago, there was a proposal to build a little tiny house village there in the middle of...
By the other village,
yeah. And part of the issues were, who's going to maintain this? And the fact is, that is a very, very difficult challenge. And that's where money comes back into it, because volunteers will only clean so much.
It's easy to get the funding for the first go.
Exactly. But I can tell you that as pastors, we are looking at these options. We're considering them. And we're trying, we want to partner with the city, and we have a good relationship with Mark and Thomas and Andy, and so we want to make this happen in a way that's reasonable. I think the intermediate step is going to have to be, starting July 1, some regulation that says you can do this, but after 7 a.m., you got to move on. And that buys us some time. It gives us some liability coverage. It covers our liability. And it also may spur us to take more action. So I can tell you from the church's perspective, we're not going to give up on this, but it's just it just takes time to develop these programs. So thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
The real elephant in the room is where you would have even a temporary place.
Yeah.
that is the elephant in the room, because being quite blunt, not in my backyard. That's point number one. Point number two, on public property, if you want to hear a community that's going to get upset, is if they start using the parks. Okay? So point number three is, in the city, we have virtually no place to put a camp for even overnight camping, except in our public parks. Is that correct, Andy?
We're very, very limited on areas, that's for sure, that it would fall under the safety and meet the requirements that are going to be mandated.
So I think you could say that's true.
What do we do?
Crescent City, like I said, is about the same size population as this place. And I don't know how they're doing it. I know the churches are doing a lot of stuff, you know, giving socks and all that kind of thing. They do that there. And then another church does feeding. So, and they do get bussed with the city transit places. So how that operates, I'm not sure, but.
Wayne in Sutherland, I know him quite well, he started it, and he's ran into some problems. Number one, he's trying to teach the people, like you said, in general, from tents to, and he's they're having trouble doing that, because people that, I mean, there's good people out there that, like the one fellow here said, had a job, but can't pay that heavy rent. But then there's other people on the other side where you're trying to bring up to say, you don't throw your garbage here, you don't throw your urine and everything here. And they're having trouble. And I don't know what I want to help the people that are trying to get help, but I don't know how Wayne does it, because he's knocking his head against a cement wall all the time trying to figure that out.
One of our grandsons lives in LA, running a one room in a house. He had to get two other people to come in and help pay the rent. It was a lot, $2,000.
Yeah.
One room.
Oh, Alicia, anything to add?
So UPN is running the 30 pallet homes in Roseburg, for the city of Roseburg, I believe. That's what I read in the paper. Or is that in Sutherland?
That must be Sutherland.
So that's where the pallet homes are.
Yes.
I couldn't hear that.
She says that there's 30 pallet homes that are being run by UCAN.
Well, yes. The Sutherland operation is being, I think they partner with Umpqua Heart.
Yes.
Okay. Umpqua Heart.
There's also, but that's also, there's a site in Roseburg that has a few of those too.
Here,
that could be what you're talking about.
That's what you're talking about.
And there's 30 pallet homes there.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And they're developing more because they just, but it's very expensive.
Right.
They got a big grant from the states, but it's not even a year old yet.
And that's what it comes down to, because the management of that, you know, managing the people that are staying there, is just, you'd have to have an organization like that coming into help, where it's like dedicated employees to the management of the facility. Because,
yeah.
I mean, volunteers, that's helpful, but that's not guaranteeing that someone's
going to
be there every day.
So we're looking at two main subjects here. Number one, we're looking at the question that we started the evening with, one, two, or three. So we need to kind of get to that in the next couple minutes. Steve, go ahead. You got one more shot.
Thank you. I would simply say that, again, I favor number two, the second option of establishing some limits. I would also wonder if it would be possible, you have a traffic safety commission, you have a parks board, would it be possible to create a homeless coalition, a homeless board, a homeless, I don't know what we would call it. You can't call it homeless because that's the wrong word politically.
Alan suggested under-house tax force.
An under-house task force. Create such a force and tell them, okay, here's our intermediate step, and use some of the models that are already out there, because there are some great models that exist, but it's just going to be finding the way that it fits us. Because you're right, Alicia, there's some great stuff being done, but it's a matter of you're going to have to find the right volunteers, the right team to make it happen. So that would be my third minute.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier, though, in the assembling a group of people that are both willing and able to draw this to a resolution.
Yeah.
So real quick, I'm going to make sure that everybody has had their opportunity to speak up here.
What happened to ADAPT? I thought they were going to handle it homeless.
They work on it all the time.
It's a continuing effort with them.
They don't work here in Winston?
They're working in four counties. They have operations in Josephine. They have operations in Coos, Curry, and Douglas County. They have 500 employees trying to figure this stuff out. Not specifically this, but the whole issue with integrated health care. So they're just one organization, and there's tons of, and they can't do it all.
Well, I know Crescent City took one of the, I don't know if they bought the hotel, but they bought a hotel, and they put people in there, but once it fills up, and more come.
Yeah. ADAPT has purchased two hotels in Portland, in Roseburg, to get that going with, so we'll kind of see. So I guess where we are right now is, let's take a straw ballot. Who is in favor of option number one? Raise your hands, please. And who's in favor of option number two? Raise your hands, please. And option number three? Okay, so we'll work towards option number three, but apparently the majority of the people want to work on option number two to begin with, which I think is what we should do.
Mayor, just one more tidbit on that. When you're contemplating the transition from two to three, when you're thinking about kind of the elements and trying to get towards that as maybe the ultimate goal, one thing that the legislation requires is that you cater to your homeless population in your incorporated limits, which means if you're going to designate a specific location, it has to be in your incorporated limits. So that eliminates a regional approach, and we talked about that a little bit. But one thing, after all the research we've been doing on this, one thing is certain. This is going to continue to be litigated. At the state level, there's going to be more case law that comes out that clarifies different components of it. And one thing that I think a lot of people, and this may be an assumption, but a lot of people are certain on, is that when you're trying to cater to your homeless population, let's say in Winston, that kind of conflicts with the whole definition of what you're experiencing in terms of homelessness, meaning you don't have a residence. You don't know where the residence is. So they feel that that element is vulnerable, and eventually that incorporated limit requirement will be lifted, allowing for a regional approach. So that's why a lot of cities are just kind of spearheading this option two idea, with the idea that further litigation will help transition into that regional type approach, meaning build something comprehensive in Roseburg, you can send them there. That becomes a very viable option. So just as you're thinking those two options, to put it in context.
The most worrisome part for me, quite frankly, is this is going to be another one of the state's infamous unfunded mandates. Mm-hmm. They're going to throw out a whole bunch of stuff we're going to have to do, and there's not going to be any funding to support it. So anyway.
One thing what we don't know is how many homeless people do we actually have in the community?
Well, they come in and out all the time, dude.
I know that. That's what I'm talking about. It's fluid, all right? How many are, should we say, semi-fluid? How many of them are here, period? Well, we don't have that information.
Commissioner, I don't think we have a huge homeless problem. Most of our homeless issue in Winston, quite frankly, is on the other side of the bridge in the county. And
for now.
Well,
once this becomes law and they know they can have our part.
And that's the part that we're trying to get in front of. That we need to be able to, you're absolutely correct.
You also need to understand there are about four or five different definitions of homeless. Yes.
Right.
Exactly. School district, the McKinney-Vento Act, defines homelessness pretty loosely. You could be having a secure place to sleep and still be homeless.
That's right.
And so that's a one of the issues as we move forward is not going to be able to be solved in this particular ordinance, but moving forward, any homeless group is going to have to define who are we serving? What is the population that we are trying to serve?
Correct, correct. Yes, ma'am.
At
least stand up so we can.
It seems like the small towns are not going to get the money, anybody under 10,000. So it's like you're being penalized for being a small community. That just doesn't seem right. And it seems like, why should you have to comply with all the same stuff that the ones that are getting the money, actually it's like being pitted, is how I see it.
So go ahead and contact your legislator and explain your angst to him, please, or them. That's a full-time job. Okay, if there's nothing else, let's go ahead and take about 5-7 minutes and come back for council meeting. Thank you very much.